Fighters, it's time for the Thursday Q&A episode here on the Contractor Fight podcast. We take your questions and we answer them here on the show. Send your questions to help@thecontractorfight.com with the subject line podcast to get your questions in front of us. Tom and I will pick the questions that are the most relevant to the people here in the fight. You guys rock. Let's do this.
Fighters, before we dig into the Q&A episode, we see here on our end so many questions that come in about making more money. And I just want to give you guys a resource if you don't already have it. And it's our 50% gross profit sheet. All right, listen, the fastest way to put more money in your pocket right now in your business is to raise your gross profit. And we show you how to do that. So if you head to thecontractorfight.com/50, fill out your name and your email, you'll have instant access to this and you'll be on your way to making more money. So go grab that right now. Let's get on with the Q&A episode here today. All right, everybody, welcome to the Contractor Fight Podcast. I'm back with Sonny Pinero, Pinero Construction. He's also one of our fight coaches. We're digging into some questions from our Facebook group, and we're going to pick it up here with my man, Carlos. Now, Carlos, I'll give you some quick context, my friends. This one's funny, man. This is funny. I could make the case for a couple different directions to go on this one, but I'm gonna go with my initial gut on it. But he's a painting contractor, from what I can tell. Has one location, doing 250 to 300 grand a year at 65% gross profit, one man show that subs out all the residential painting in Texas. And his question is, I'm expanding from one local area to five markets in three states, and the goal is to expand some more the next year. We're tying all markets into an 800 phone number, so we don't have multiple numbers. However, what's the best way to advertise in each individual market, or is there something more global you'd suggest? I need help with the strategies and avoid a clusterfuck. And then he also added, he just told where he wants to open these locations. And that's when I asked him, you guys, what his revenue and gross profit was. And guys, remember when Sonny and I get these things, we don't always have all of the context to something, right? I don't know Carlos's financial situation. Okay. Meaning when I first read, I'm going to go from one location to five in three different states, and I'm only doing 250 a year or so. I look at that and I go, okay, well, I don't know if he's got like big bags of money somewhere in the closet, Sonny. I don't know if he's got a spouse that works. Like I knew a guy that, you know, was in a similar type of situation. His wife was a surgeon and made like 300 grand a year. Right. And so it was just, so again, you guys, their context matters. So I'm going to answer this like he doesn't have bags of money in the closet. Okay. So if I'm wrong and the context is wrong, but if I roll the dice based on the averages of people I've worked with over the years, that's usually the situation. Okay. Hopefully I'm wrong. And he shared where he was in Texas. And I know the area. It's a heavily populated area. There's a lot of work there. And I look at it, Sonny, and I go, to only be doing 250 to 300 a year as a painter, I wouldn't think about another location until I was a couple million a year. Again, I don't know all the motivation behind this. I don't know if he wants to franchise or whatever, but I think if you're asking, how do I advertise all these different locations? That says to me that you don't have your marketing dialed in, your ideal client dialed in, and some processes and systems. Plus, I've seen some other posts in the group from this cat here that kind of make me feel like everything's not dialed in as strong as it could be. So
is this a grass is greener on the other side, or is this a, I don't know any better and I just think this is what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So because I shared, I don't know if it was on here, but I shared not too long ago with somebody that we were doing predominantly residential painting. I heard there was good money in commercial. This is 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And so we tried starting a commercial division in our same city. And basically, guys, I was trying to ride two horses. Okay. It was two very different types of painters that I needed on each job. And it was a total mess. And the commercial side failed greatly. I shut it down pretty quick and went back all residential and made great money and stuff like that and had a great business. And so, Sonny, I'm glad you bring that up, because a lot of guys are like, oh, I hear this a lot. I've maxed out my area, so I need to move to another area. I can promise you at 250 to 300 a year in revenue, you haven't maxed out fucking subdivision in your area yet, let alone your area. So my advice without knowing all the context is multiple locations is probably the last thing you need to be doing right now. How about you, Sonny? You got another take on this? I'm not seeing.
Well, you were thinking it was a few $100,000 a year, right? It's a one man show.
And he subs everything out.
Subs everything out.
Does $250,000 to $300,000 top line in one location currently. Let's just do the math on that. Okay. Let's say he's getting a 50% GP on $300,000. Okay. Well, he's getting a 65, he said. All right. So let's just go benefit up. $300,000 times 0.65. It's $195,000 in gross profit money. Minus whatever his overhead and stuff. I don't know how he's surviving. I don't know how you're eating. Okay. If you're really building a business that's systematized and you have people in the office and you're not married to the thing and wearing every hat, you know? So that's where I just look and I go, you ain't making any money unless there's more of the story. I don't know.
I think the place it's coming from is probably he feels like he's successful in what he's doing and it's probably not a lot of overhead. So a lot of that gross profit is going to him. The problem is in that scenario, you can't just scale yourself. Mm-mm. So you always have to scale your process, procedures, and production capacity, which is employees or subs, right? And so like I'm a general contractor. I sub all workout. Even I have 16 employees, right? And so, I don't think we should be worrying about other cities yet. And it's like scale one thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like there's a lot online. There's a lot of people talking about it. Unless you're super successful with one thing and it's running by itself and you just have to, you know, push a couple buttons and answer a couple of questions, it's not time to move on to another company. I did this myself just a few years ago. So we're a general contractor. We do no work in-house. I decided to bring on a plumbing partner and he was a licensed plumber. We brought it in. We brought some plumbers on and all it was a distraction for me. We did like $2 million the first year in it, but it was distracting me from building Panero and my construction company and growing it. It didn't help us at all. It kind of recaptured some revenue. But the day I said, all right, this is a distraction. I'm not building the plumbing company more, putting all focus on Panero. Since then, we've doubled in size in Panero. So it's just where I'm putting my focus. You know, you can have 7 streams of income, but it's just taking your time and splitting up between 7 different ways. So just go all in on one until one's creating enough income where you can go do something else with. So that's kind of the same philosophy here is, you know, probably a couple steps ahead than where you need to be.
Yeah. I think you touched on, we don't know his long-term goals and we don't know the motivation and maybe he wants to move to one of these other locations or whatever it is, but Sonny, you nailed it when you're like, who's going to run these things? You know, because if you go from 1 to 5 locations and everything runs through you, you're riding 5 different horses at the same time. You don't have enough appendages on your body to be on, you can only be on 4 horses at once and they're going to run in different directions and split you apart. So, all right. Hopefully that helps, Carlos. I know you're a good dude and you're trying to figure some shit out.
Probably wasn't what he wanted to hear.
Probably not, but that's all right. Like I said before, guys, I don't have all the context. I don't know. I'm going off of what was typed in a Facebook.
Well, let's just use this as an example. I used to have, I have licenses from California to Washington and or Oregon to Colorado, but I'm doing more work just in Southern California than I ever did trying to do work in all those other states. I mean, I do them occasionally when we have a customer that has stuff out there, but I haven't even tapped into a fifth of what I can probably produce here in Southern California alone. And that's within my own construction company. So I'm just using that as just a flat out example. And I'm going to do probably $20 million, 19 to 21 this year.
There you go. Yeah. So, whole ass in it instead of half ass in a bunch of locations.
Yeah.
Right. So appreciate y'all being here, guys. Let me get to the next question here. Ashton asked, how do I get business capital as a new business? I replied, what do you do and what do you need capital for? And never got a response because I was trying to get more context. I'm going to keep this one quick, Sonny. One of the things I love about the trades, and I believe Ashton is in remodeling. Ashton was one of the people I went to the personal profile and I didn't see anything about the business. So I searched the group for some different posts that they weighed in on and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So from what I could tell, it's a residential remodeler. So that being the case, you guys, residential remodeling, residential construction, painting, flooring, all those things. But one of the most beautiful things about being in the trades, you guys, is the customer is your bank. Okay. You can grow your business and fund your business with OPM, other people's money. All right. Neil in the fight, and I talk about this all the time through the years of how so many guys, this is not like the trades are generally not something that you're going to go and get a bunch of investors and capital and this and that. And so if you don't have cash to reinvest back into the business, Ashton, then you are not profitable enough. It's that simple. Okay. Either or your profits are high, but you don't have no value because you're not, you know, you're a young business. So I think you're going to have to win. And I mean, win, I don't mean like you get the sale. I mean, you get the sale and then you do the job and you win that project, you hit your targets and then you move to the next one. And then you win that job, hit your targets and move to the next. And that's how you accumulate profit. That's how you have money to reinvest back into your business, to build your brand, get trucks on equipment, whatever the heck you're going to need, sale, PMs and all those different things. Sonny, I think you were a great example of that with your go around here with Pinero, how for many years, and probably still, you're not paying yourself what you could because you're investing back into your company, into the people and all that. So those are my thoughts for Ashton.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of raising capital or getting investors as a contractor. It's not really needed unless you're a business that has, you know, heavy equipment or heavy materials. It's just not needed. You have deposits within residential work, you know, reinvesting the capital that you're building, your profits. So if you're doing work, you know, instead of paying yourself a little extra, put a little more money back into your business. You know, if you're brushing and rolling, and you make a little bit of money, go buy a paint sprayer. Now you can make more money with the paint sprayer than you could brush and rolling. And then now you have a little bit more money, right? So we don't have enough net profit at the end of the day for it to be worth us taking loans or paying interest on any sort of capital that's out there. It just doesn't make sense from a construction standpoint, you know, outside of equipment and, you know, things where it's not really a labor service. So,
yeah. Outside of things that are going to make you money, you have no business borrowing money for.
Yeah, construction just doesn't make sense to raise money and have a ton of partners and stuff. I started my first business with $2,000 credit card. You know, I started Pinero Construction with nothing. I just had a customer and a Hyundai Sonata. You know, didn't even have a work truck at the time. You know, so you don't need much to be able to make money in construction. To be honest with you, you just have to have your bags and some tools and
get after it. Learn how to market, build your brand, sell, deliver a great experience, and things compound from there. And I want to end Ashton's question, and then we'll get to Chris's, the last question from Facebook, then we'll get to the comments here. So many of you are in a hurry to grow bigger, okay? And you've lost sight of the fact that everybody that you look at Sonny, you look at me, you look at whoever else you read and follow and all this other stuff have spent a couple decades, decade and a half, two decades building their brand, honing their chops, developing their skills. You see somebody post a nice car or a nice vacation they went on or whatever it is, and you think like you've been in the game 3 years and that you deserve that. And you don't. Sorry. Most of you don't. Okay. And not because you're a bad person, but it's just you haven't built the business to the point where you're getting some of those financial spoils of the hunt, right? Like you're going to, because things compound. A lot of guys, Sonny, you've seen this, when they make a bunch of money, they go out and blow it on a stupid truck or something else or whatever. They buy a boat and this and that. And they never reinvest back into the business, into building their brand, into hiring a project manager and paying them 20% more than the average one makes in their area so that they can get them. So anyway, all right. Man, there are a lot of questions coming in here, and we're not going to get to all of them, but we're going to get to Chris's here. Chris in the Facebook group, this is the last one in the Facebook group, then we'll go to these comments and you can pick a couple there, Sonny, if you want. How to implement bonuses, raises, and job evaluations without the other team members getting jealous or butthurt? Oh, see, back to culture. This is back to culture, man, where my thing's like, you got to tell the truth, okay? And I have no problem with people knowing what people make, because there's, you should have a, what I call a mastery ladder, guys. You come in at a laborer and this is the range you make. You get moved to this position in the company, this is the range you make, and here's the skills. And there's hard skills and soft skills. And there's more soft skills as you move up the mastery ladder and the pay moves up. And so it's out there for everyone to see. And so number one, Chris, I would make sure that you are absolutely dialed in when it comes to your job descriptions, your pay scales, all that stuff, whatever language you want to use, so that there's no confusion for anybody in the company. Okay. Number two, I hate the word bonus. I don't use it. Because most people want a bonus for shit they should be doing anyway. Okay, that's been my experience. What we did and what we've coached a lot of people to do, and then I'll shut up and hand it to Sonny here. Guys, what's cool about having Sonny or somebody else on here with me is sometimes we have the totally opposite things to say, and that's cool because there's no one way to skin a cat here. We created for our foremen what we called a crew leader management fee. When certain criteria were met, they could make a management fee, not for painting, but for managing the job properly. They were only going to get so much an hour in their whole career in my company to paint something. Okay. Anything additional to that was about management and upsells and great experience and things that they had control over. And somebody in our company with our crew leader management fee could make another $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year, up to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, okay, depending on how they managed their projects, and or more. There was no ceiling on it, but it was in their court, and it required them to level up their skills, okay? Because I'm the type of person, this is just part of my values, you guys, is I want everyone rowing the fucking boat with me. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to have some skin in the game. I perform, I make more. You perform, you make more. All right. That's just how I'm wired. I've just been in too many situations. And Sonny, I'll shut up with this. The first time I ever offered a bonus plan to my crew, I gave away all my gross profit because my decimal was in the wrong place when I calculated it. So I literally gave away all the gross profit on this project. The guys were like, man, this is amazing. We just, you know, made all this money, and I had to honor it because it's what I told them. And then we had a meeting the next week. I said, hey, I screwed up. Decimal should have been moved to here, and there shouldn't have been an additional zero on what you guys got. And they understood, and it was great. But, you know, I'm more of a pay for performance. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be compensated when we do well, but I think most companies that have these bonus things, Sonny, and compensation stuff, they don't think it through enough. And it's just kind of willy-nilly, whichever way the wind is blowing that year.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people set them up and they're not thinking long-term ramifications of the bonus structure. I love how you use like a management fee that they can earn separate, you know, like I like the idea of earning extra, not bonused, right? And it really depends on the type of business that you're running. So our culture within our company is not very, it's very team oriented because we're doing construction management. We're trying to win a championship together as a team. Yep. So I'm very careful to not create any individual incentives that would create the wrong end result in culture, like people backstabbing each other or just focusing on the numbers and whatever. So, but what we have is we have more of a profit, like a profit, informal profit sharing program within our company. And so everyone gets a piece of the pie based on their years of experience and how much they make. And so it's, we're all in it to increase the bottom line, which is all I'm really worried about also. And so, but that might not work for someone who's really sales driven with lots of sales team, right? We don't have a lot of sales people. We only have a business development person. But one of the things that stood out in that question to me was, how does he implement a bonus program and other people don't get butthurt about it? I need to make sure that if you're offering something, you have to offer something to everyone. Everyone has to have the ability to be able to, if you're going to do like a bonus program, everyone has to have the ability or has to have the ability to get in a position that they could have the position to be able to do the to participate in the bonus program, right? And so that's part of it. And if I were going to roll out just bonuses like that, which I've thought about, but I decided just to do more of a profit sharing, which is the global company doing well, is I would still make that mandatory. So the business has to hit its goal first before anyone else's bonus is kicked in. And that's a little bit more complicated structure, but that's what a lot of the people that I'm hanging out with that have larger companies are doing. Whenever there's a bonus for individuals, it's always based on the company hitting their bonus also. So if I were to roll something out in that scenario, what it would look like, hey, PMs, if you manage a certain amount of revenue, you get this bonus, but we have to hit our 5% net profit goal, right? Mm-hmm. Like there has to be the team goal first, and you have to hit that before you roll out and any of the incentives kick in. Otherwise, you're going to have the decimal in the wrong spot and you're not going to be making any money.
So I'm glad you brought up that company's got to hit its goal. It reminds me, I was coaching a multi-million-dollar landscape company several years ago, and they wanted to offer a bonus thing, and which is fine. Just because I do a thing a certain way, it's just my own worldview of certain things, and it worked for us, right? So what a lot of guys do with, and here's another reason I poo-poo bonus plans, guys, is most of y'all don't know your numbers. Most of you aren't even job costing. So the last thing you need to be doing is a bonus plan, okay? And like you got to ride a tricycle before you could ride a unicycle, okay? So I have no idea where that analogy came from, by the way. It's terrible. But you get the point. but seriously, it's like, if you struggle knowing your numbers, if your math is a shit show, if debt is coming out your ears, all these other things, you have no business talking bonuses right now, man. You got to get your financial house in order, right? Okay, so this company, and I'll just use real simple numbers, they had a net, it was bigger than this, but they had a net profit goal of $100,000. Okay, let's just call it 100 grand. Every dollar over the 100 grand, okay, became eligible for profit sharing because they needed that initial 100 grand, you guys, to reinvest into the business. They still had a little bit of debt to pay down on some equipment. They had some more marketing things that they wanted to do, blah, blah, blah. Then a couple hires they wanted to make, and you get the point. Okay. What often happens is guys pay all that profit sharing out of that initial net profit that the company needs to grow and reinvest. Okay. So for the sake here, I forget how it exactly worked out, but every dollar that came in above the 100 grand, they split 50-50.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. And the company kept 50% of it. So let's say there was another 100 grand of profit. The company would take the 50. The other 50, now here's where this is where it gets tricky and your numbers got to be, and you got to have great bookkeeping. Whatever your percent, if Sonny made, let me just do a math thing here. Say Sonny made, $35 an hour and worked 2,000 hours in the year. He made 70 grand. Okay, let's just use that number. And our overall payroll was, say, $600,000. Sonny's payroll was 11.6% of the overall payroll. So Sonny would get 11.6 of the 50 grand, which would have been 5,800. That's how this company chose to work it. So based upon what your percentage of personal income was from the overall payroll, that's how they divvied what everybody got as part of the bonus. Hopefully that confused everyone, or didn't confuse everyone as much as I think. So, all right. Appreciate y'all hanging out here with Contract to Fight, Q&A edition with Tom and Sonny. If you have a question, email it in to help@thecontractorfight.com. We'd be happy to answer it for you if we feel it's enough value to help a bunch of people. All right. And with that, give us a rating, a review, and appreciate you being here. We're out. Hey, fighters, hopefully you got some value today from the Q&A episode and that you learned something that you can apply in your business. If you have a question, send an email to help@thecontractorfight.com and in the subject line, put the word podcast and we will get that question. We'll answer it on air for you. And also, don't forget to share this with another contractor. Give us a review on iTunes, wherever you listen to this. Super appreciate you hanging out with us here today. You guys rock. We got to roll. We're out.